Good evening, Bodhi Sufferers.
Good evening.
Welcome to those who traveled today to come and be here. Good to see you. Ah, there. There's the other you. So tonight, I'm going to take some backward steps regarding what we've been discussing the last, well, what I've been discussing, I guess we've been discussing, what we've been taking up over the last few days here. And so the first one of those backward steps is the title of the poem from which our companion phrase comes. That phrase being, again, in case, for those who aren't familiar, the greatest way is not difficult if you don't pick and choose. So, as I mentioned last night, briefly, and as you may already know, the name of that, the title of the poem is Trust in Mind. And that in itself is a big teaching, just the simple three-word title, Trust in Mind. Chinese is Zhen Zhen Ming, which is translated, the Ming is verses upon, like verses upon the trusting mind, verses on faith in mind. The Zhen Zhen, there's two, they sound the same, but they mean different words. One Zhen is trust or faith or rely upon, depend upon, that kind of thing. Then the other Zhen is mind, translated in this case. But the actual meaning of the word, in Chinese, as we've talked about, and in Japanese, because the symbol, the one symbol that's pronounced Zhen, means heart-mind. So it's not a separation of, you've got your mind here and in your heart. They're one. Heart-mind. One thing. So whenever you see mind used in any of our writings, if it's coming from a traditional source, it means heart-mind. The two combined. Which for me just means being. The combination of all that I am, my heart and mind, as we look at it in the Western world, when you combine that, it's just being, or existence, or living. And that doesn't necessarily just mean my being, although that's the good place to start, your own self, your own being. But it also means the being of all things, the being of existence, in the largest sense, and the heart-mind, so the heart-mind of existence, the heart-mind of squirrels and trees and soup and stones, mountains and retreat practice. Trust in being is really what it's saying. And so the instruction is that you can trust in existence. You can trust in your own existence for everything you need. Yeah? Looking, as we do in these retreats, for hours on end, looking at our inner landscape and seeing how it's affected by the things we bump up against inwardly and outwardly. We're just looking at that territory again and again to explore it and become familiar with it. And it's like building a relationship. Over time, you learn to trust it. You can't do it right away. You have to know what it is. You have to explore and see, well, what is this? This being. Yeah? So looking at that, you can see, oh, there's the, there's this snag, there's this heavy place. You can see that, but you can also trust that which you see to provide you not only the territory which you need to navigate, but also to show you the way through. The very territory of your existence, of your being, shows you again what lies ahead and how to get through it. You don't need to call upon something from some other realm. It's all here, right there in that. So trust in mind, trust in being, trust in existence, trust in yourself, your experience. Yeah. But this isn't a blind trust. Not a blind faith. It's not saying, it's all right, you're just fine. Don't worry about it. It's a wide open, eyes sometimes, but really a wide open and active trust. Eyes wide open and active trust, yeah? Meaning, look into it, question it, grapple with it. Don't take it for granted, but don't dismiss it either. You know, we could do two disservices. One is to just blindly think, hey, everything says my life is not a problem, everything's fine, and I can just coast and not pay that much attention to it, and just kind of, in the sense of, it could be a daily affirmation. Trust in mind. It's all good. You know, that'd be doing a disservice to ourselves. And the other disservice we can do is to discard it. To discard our experience and try to find a way around it, beyond it, a way to solve it so we don't have to deal with it anymore, all of that kind of thing. Those are the two disservices. So, as from last night, it's right here in front of us, this territory. Go into it further. Go into it further. Let it work upon you. You work upon it, and you find your way through that way. Trusting, again, in your own experience and the experience of existence itself. So, and again, a little synopsis from last night of the poem. When you read the whole thing, it kind of does what we did in our discussion. Like, oh, I get it, and you start to get a handle on it, but wait, then you go in a different direction. Now I don't get it, but now I get this. Oh, so I'm supposed to. And every attempt to nail it down and get it and say, aha, is always thwarted. Because if you're trying to capture it, that greatest way that is, you know, beyond capture, then you're killing it if you're holding it down, right? If you're like, aha, I've got it. So you watch that territory, and that's what kind of happened last night. And it happens in our precept study, too, I think you're all familiar with. Yeah? When we take those up, you know, we're trying to go, and here's the instructions, do not do this, do not do that, and we're trying to look for something to say, here's what you do. But we don't do that, do we? For those who've been in our recent study and those who've done it before, we realize we muddy up the waters further and make it completely a gray area, and it's not about figuring out the recipe or the formula about how to do things. It's about coming into relationship with our lives, with our being, with our existence, through methods of studying precepts as one thing, and methods like meditation, and listening to Dharma talks, and taking up these ancient phrases and looking at them. That's how we come into deeper relationship with our own being. And that's what this is really about. It's not about getting the formula or the recipe. It's about nurturing that relationship to be intimately in touch with the heart-mind of existence, the one that's here and the one that's wide out there, knowing that those are the same thing, just a localized version of eternity right here. So looking at how it's not a formula, or that we don't have a formula and a recipe, I just want to be clear that this phrase about the great way, the greatest way, is not difficult if you don't pick and choose. That is not a formula. It's not saying, if you want to know the greatest way, if you want to manifest the greatest way, don't pick and choose. That's not what it's saying. It's really saying, look at your own experience. So the greatest way, again, it's vast and boundless like outer space. You can't grasp it because it's everywhere at once. And it's also completely you right here. And you can't grasp that either because you can't get a hold of yourself. Like I said the other night, you can't. It's like trying to find the mind with the mind. You're using what you're looking for to find what you're looking for, and it just goes around in circles. Yeah? So this isn't a formula for bringing forth the greatest way because it never leaves. It is always present. Everywhere. It's just a description of the relationship. When you're not picking and choosing, there's no difficulty in going, into the greatest way. And you kind of can feel it without even having to say, this is the greatest way. You can kind of just feel, oh. And then that dial I've been using to adjust it, it's like, and then when there is picking and choosing, you can feel there is difficulty. But that's just what the greatest way feels like when it's difficult. The greatest way is never diminished and it's never added to. It just, the quality of it changes based on how we're relating to it. And that's when we look into trusting our own heart minds. And we can see, yeah, when I get tight about this and I have an idea of where I'm going, you know, all that kind of stuff, and I'm expecting this, I can feel really disconnected from things. And then when I don't do that, things feel open and wide. I can notice that as well. And it's just, those are just two facets of one relationship changing, depending on the circumstances and how I'm relating to it. I think about from yesterday's reading from Shito, when he says, walking the way, we're never near or far from it. And that's that kind of the greatest way. You can't grasp it. You're not near it because it's nearer than near. It's you completely. And you're not far from it either because, well, how can you be far from something that's everywhere? It reaches everywhere, but it starts right here. It's like a circle with no circumference and no center. Never near or far from that, but always right in the midst of it. Yeah? So he says, walking the way, we're never near or far from it. Deluded, we're cut off from it by mountains and rivers. So that feeling of being cut off from it is actually just, that's what it feels like when you're deluded. You feel like you're cut off from it, but you're not. That's just the quality of your relationship at that moment. That's how you're connected to it, in the feeling of not being connected to it. Yeah? You know, when you have a relationship with a human being and things are rough and there's like this chasm between you and things are difficult, that's your connection at that time. So same way with that greatest way. It just feels different under different circumstances. Like today's reading, when we read it, it's like, oh, that speaks to this too. There's one line where he talks about wiping clean the mirror so it shines unobstructed. Because the light is shining unobstructed. So now I thought, and when it is obstructed, the light just shines through obstruction. It comes out crookedly or a little dim or bounces over in that, you know, it goes in different directions, but it's still shining. The light never stops shining. When things are cleared out, it just unobstructed. When they're not cleared out, it shines and it bounces in weird directions, but it's still the light. Even in complete darkness, that's just another form of light. Or the other way around. Darkness is light, lightness is dark. I'm not sure. So that's how it is. Relationships change over time. So maybe the only advice and encouragement to be taken from that phrase about not picking and choosing is kind of, well, if you notice it's not difficult when you're not picking and choosing, maybe whenever you don't have to get caught up in that world of picking and choosing, don't. So you can nurture that side of the relationship, that deeper ease connection. So then when the times of picking and choosing come and you need to be in there, they're not as pointed and sharp because you had this longer stretch of intermittent or not intermittent, you know, long durations of being in that place of non-difficulty. But it's also good to know when the difficulty arises, you haven't lost connection. Nothing's gone anywhere. Again, the relationship has just shifted for that moment. And you're part of that relationship, so you have a say in shifting it in different ways, yeah? If you choose. So that was one of the backward steps. Another one, this came to mind last night after something. Sometime in the evening, I was wandering back to my room, and another old koan friend, like this phrase I said comes up for me again and again. This particular koan is a favorite of mine. It comes up again. It happens to deal with Zhao Zhou from our koan last night and the guy who this phrase came up for a lot too. But this was at a time we're rolling him back to when he was a student. And he had a great awakening through this experience. And I'm thinking perhaps this might be why that phrase kept coming to find him. Maybe he was disposed to it or predisposed, I don't know. One of the two. But anyway, he goes to his teacher, Nanzhuan, and says, "What is the Tao?" or what is the greatest way? Yeah? But what is the Tao? Nanzhuan says, ordinary mind is the Tao. Zhao Zhou asks, well, then should I direct myself toward it? Nanzhuan replies, if you move toward it, you get further away from it. Zhao Zhou says, but if I don't move toward it, how will I know that I'm encountering the Tao? Nanzhuan says, the Tao is not subject to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. That's that thing of, aha, I found it, this is it. We, you know, stake our claim and we've, ah, I know it. That's when we've made static something that is dynamic. And that's the delusion, to think that we've gotten a hold of it and we can hold on to it. So knowing is delusion. Not knowing is blankness. That's that place of hanging out with, it's all good, I don't need to do anything, I can just sit and let things be. Well, that's just, yeah, that's blankness. That's no good either. That's just sitting back and not taking part in the world. It's just going with the flow as if you have no say in how the flow goes. So knowing is delusion, not knowing is blankness. If you truly encounter the genuine Tao, you will find it as vast and boundless as outer space. How can this be discussed at the level of right and wrong? Yeah? So you think about the discussions we have, trying to figure out, oh, it's this, it's that. We're trying to say yes, no, all that kind of stuff. How can something that's vast and boundless as outer space and as ungraspable as ourselves be reduced to right and wrong? Yeah? So echoes of the other talks. This is just like, this is like a capping phrase koan for this other stuff going on, it feels like to me. Because another part that comes up, the snag of this koan for me, it was a snag for a while, then I had a kind of an, oh, aha. And I'm still testing that aha out, and so we'll see how it sounds for you. It goes back to when he says, ordinary mind is the way, and, well, should I direct myself toward it? No, if you do that, you get away from it. But don't we have the ordinary inclination to go for it? Isn't it ordinary to direct ourselves toward it? So it seems like a contradiction. If my ordinary mind says, hey, I want to go toward that, how can that be a problem? So, yeah, I hung out that for a long time. It's like, that doesn't compute. I don't see the difference here. I don't see how that's in opposition. But then it came one time, as I brought up in our talk last night, it's that you again. If you direct yourself toward it, you move away from it. Which means, if I have an idea of what ordinary mind is, which in order to direct myself toward it, I must have an idea of what it is. And we already know that knowing is delusion. So I have an idea of what it is, and I'm directing myself toward that, I'm getting further away from it because I've contrived something. I've made up an ordinary mind as an idea. Yeah? But if I find I'm motivated to discover and move toward it, and I follow that, trusting my heart mind, trusting my experience, then who's directing who? Yeah? That's just the natural, organic process of being a human being. We come up with these ideas, we want to get in touch with them, and then we finagle all ways to try to get there, and the thing is, that's part of it too. It's not a problem to do those things. That's just what it is to be human. That is our heart-mind. That is our experience of being. It's just when we believe in our constructions and we're sure that we're right, and then we are directing ourselves. Yeah? So again, that you, it hinges upon, that you that decides it knows what's best in this moment, or it knows the best path to get to what it wants, it's just reaching for something it's concocted. And how can that be? Well, that can be discussed at the level of right and wrong, I suppose. So there's, you know, here's that linchpin again, the you, the me, right at the center of it all. Or the centerless, circumferenceless circle. Does that make sense? You know, connecting with the other things.
Yes.
So the verse for this koan, which is from the Gateless Gate, or the Doorless Gateway, or the Gateless Gateway, many translations, is by Wu Min, and he speaks of this. This kind of relationship of being fully with being and with existence in many, many forms, many shades, many shapes. He says, spring flowers, the moon in autumn, the cool breezes of summer, winter snow. When idle concerns don't cloud your heart mind, that's your best season.
Your best
way? Season. So spring flowers, the moon in autumn, the cool breezes of summer, winter snow. When idle concerns don't cloud your heart mind, that's your best season. And when they do cloud your heart mind, it's still a season. It just may not be your best. It's kind of a clunky, you know, jaggedy season. I don't know, but it's still a season. Just like the greatest way never is not here. It's always a season, but how you relate to it changes the quality of the season. Yeah? The quality of your relationship to the season, I should say. A different translation, I like the way they work together here, of instead of saying when idle concerns cloud your heart mind, another translation says when idle concerns hang in your mind or in your heart mind. It's like, oh, I know that. And it's usually, you know, I like the clouds because these concerns I have, you know, they pass through. Some of them are those trivial little clouds blowing through the heart mind landscape. Some storms go through, sometimes it becomes a big concern, but you know, those idle concerns, they just want to flow through, but I'm the one who hangs them. It's like, oh, this seems really important. I'm going to get a nail and hang this cloud in my mind, which is really a funny image, but I do it all the time, right? Oh, this is, I'm going to, and I hang it up there, and so I'm the one hanging my clouds in my mind. I'm the one clouding my mind. I'm making that choice, yeah? Or allowing them to. So by hanging them, that clouds my heart mind. But if I open up the space and just let them flow through, you know, some are going to, they have, like, you've watched clouds. Some go by really quick and some go by slowly. But if we allow them their own season, they hang out for as long as they need to and then they go. And it's not my investing in them or trying to shoo them away. I guess that could be another, the idle concern of beware, clouds, stay out. And I could hang that in my mind too. But instead of doing any active hanging of things, I can open up and let the storms pass, let the cloudy days go, let the foggy, dense days come and go, right? Clear blue sky days will be there as well. And this called to mind my house. Because Wendy and I, our birthdays are a month apart. And so this year, on her birthday, I hung up a happy birthday banner and this little colorful balloon-looking things. And they've been there for a month. That's just what we do. Hang it up and say, like, oh, let's just stretch it out for the month. Remind us it's our birthday season. And then when my birthday came, she added a few things to it. And when I get home, I'll see if they're still there and look forward to taking them down. Because for a month, you know, I've hung these things in the heart mind of our house. Or we have. I'm the first guilty party. And they've just become the way it is in the house. When I take them down, it's like, oh, the skyline of our house is revealed again. When I take down these things that I've hung up. And that's always refreshing. It's nice to have them there for their season. Let them be there. And then when it's time to let them go, let them go. Same thing with our concerns. idle or not. When it's time to deal with them, when picking and choosing must be done, do it. And when it's over, return to not picking and choosing and that sense of ease and non-difficulty. Yeah. All right. So, now I'm rolling things back in a different way. This is to the words I sent out to go with the flyer. So you've met these. And reading them, I looked at it tonight. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm just talking about that. It's like, all we're ever doing is talking about the exact same thing over and over in many different ways. And I don't know. I like doing that. It's enjoyable to just pick it up from this facet, and everything. But then when I look at it, it's like, well, it's just the same thing. And that's not a problem. Here's some of the words. Not getting caught up in the picking and choosing of who we have to be and how things should go and what is supposed to come from it all. A freedom opens up and a sense of ease settles in. This freedom and ease is always present, right here at our feet and in our bones. It looks just like we look and acts just like we act, not requiring anything other than for us to simply be. I guess I'd add, and fully be, in that sense of fully take advantage of this opportunity of being a human. Yeah? There's a shift here when we go looking into that territory and exploring the relationship and the nature of the heart-mind. And that ease settles in, there can kind of be this click where we realize, you know, all these plans we have and stories about who we need to be to fix our lives and everything is based on this idea that our life is a problem that we need to solve. And that's a frustration, because everything we do to try to solve it, we get the right this, the right that, we find our way, or we stop doing this. There's still that sense of, I didn't solve it. This life just won't go away.
Good thing.
And eventually, there's the clicking of, oh, it's not a problem. All this is the feature. This is what we do. This is what it is to be a human animal, trying to solve our existence. When we give up the idea that we can solve it and realize that's just the activity of being a human, that's the motivation that keeps us growing and, you know, having goals and doing different things, that's just what drives us, then our life switches from being a problem to an opportunity. Look at all of the things I get to experience and the opportunities for growth, including when I go through the hardships and sorrows of life. And the dull, dry areas, and then the exciting times, and all those spaces. They're all opportunities to be human. And we should take full advantage of that. So when we have those idle concerns no longer clouding our heart mind, we can more fully take advantage of our existence and our being. Not only for ourselves, but in giving it to the existence and being of all things. Yeah? So yeah, you're an opportunity, not a project. Nothing to solve, much to discover and explore through that trust in heart mind. Yeah. All right, coming around the bend. So last night's koan, this is now I'm rolling it in back in the other direction, I guess. Last night's koan had a verse to it, has a verse to it as well, which to me rhymes really nicely with the verse from this koan that I just shared. So this verse is from Zhuido, who compiled the Blue Cliff Record. An elephant trumpets. A lion roars. Flavorless talk blocks up people's mouths. South, north, east, west. The sun soars. The moon courses. When I first saw that, knowing, you know, this is the problem with knowing, and hearing about this elephant and a lion, I thought about, you know, there's certain bodhisattvas, one rides an elephant, one rides a lion. I started thinking about that, but then I was like, no, dummy. He's just saying elephants make that noise. Elephants trumpet. Lions roar. It's not about any symbolism at all. It's very direct. This is what they do. And humans, when you give them flavorless talk, it blocks up their mouths. So what's this flavorless talk? He's referring to the cliche, that whole conversation with the koan, which I think it's more about Zhao Zhou's reply, and he's like, yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't give that guy anything to hook onto or bite into or challenge. He just kind of just agrees with him, and it doesn't have any flavor to it. And that's what blocks us up, is flavorless things. If something tastes great, whether it's, you know, sweet or robust and we like it, we have no problem sinking our teeth into it and consuming it. And if something's bitter, icky, we have no problem kicking it out and avoiding it. But when we're offered something that we put it in there and it doesn't really have a flavor, we get confused. I don't know, should I spit it out? I mean, is there more in the middle if I chew harder? Where's the flavor? We get stuck. And that's, you know, the other two are kind of, when I'm looking for the flavorful thing and discarding the bitter things, I'm just serving myself. And those could be the stories I tell myself. Oh, this is valuable. This is good. I'm just going to go for those things. Oh, I don't like this. I'm going to discard it. And it's not bad to discriminate and know these things. But if that's the scope of my existence, going for what I enjoy and discarding what I don't, I'll be occupied with that small project for the rest of my life, and I'll never complete it. It'll be a constant maintenance project of protecting and fending off and nourishing and, you know, mastering the recipe to get everything to be flavored, whatever it might be. It's a very limited and tiring project. But if I'm given the flavorlessness, it stops all that. I don't know what to do with it. It's there in my mouth. I can't swallow it. I don't want to swallow it. But I don't yet want to spit it out either, because I don't know. There might be some other flavor here. Let me chew into it. Let me bite in. And maybe that's what I have to do to really taste it. Or just get a whole big mouthful of mush and its texture. I don't know. But that kind of thing, when it's not appealing to me, either by appealing to my desires or by satisfying my need to not be disrupted, that kind of appealing. When I'm not trying to serve that self and I allow it there, when it has nothing that I can tell right off the bat to offer me, maybe that's a good place to bite in. Yeah, like last night. When it bumps up against me and it's difficult, maybe that's the place to enter. Stops up my mouth, blocks me, and I have to really pay attention to it. And that seems to me, you know, the heart-mind existences. Many-flavored. Smorgasbord. Bite on through. All right, so I'm going to close with Tenkei. He makes a comment on these last two lines. The south, north, east, west. The sun soars. The moon courses. And it feels like he's saying the same thing I've been saying, which is saying the same thing everybody else has been saying for such a long time. Looking back, I looked at, you know, when did this all start, this particular connection of things? 1,400 years ago, roughly, is when Trust in Mind came out. A few hundred years later, Zhao Zhou wrestled and tangled with Nan Zhuan, had his ordinary mind thing. Then he started doing the greatest way. And then nearly a century later, Tenkei and Hakuin made comments on this. And now we've been talking about it. So this kind of exploration of this territory of not picking and choosing has been going on for at least 1,400 years on the surface, and certainly much longer from before then. Yeah. So it's a timeless thing. And I like what Tenkei says about that. It's timelessness and it's timeliness. Yeah. This is the presence of the matter that has been there all along. Before the Buddha appeared in the world, south, north, east, west. Yeah? And before the founder of Zen came from the west, the sun soars, the moon courses. This is called the koan of the presence of the matter that is everywhere, always. Today it is still thus. There is no change, no difference. Don't miss it right where you are. It's the tip of your own nose. It's unavoidable to dwell on this. Right now, unsheath your eyes and look.
Mm.